The Weekly Long Box is brought to you this week by Handy Holder. Do you have a tablet device? What if you were to accidentally drop it on the floor and break it? With Handy Holder, you would never have to worry about that again. Visit hand, the letter E, holder.com to learn more about the world's best universal tablet holder. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 39. Of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined as always by Todd. Todd, how are we doing this evening?
I'm doing really good this week.
I have to do the phony radio announcer voice so I say the correct episode number and that I don't stumble over my words to begin the show.
That's always a good thing. We want to enunciate in the beginning of the show.
That's right. Todd, I know you're not so much as a podcasty person, but we'll get into, you know, your week and everything that's been going on, in addition to our usual comic news and stuff that we read and everything else that's going on. But I know that you do not get to listen to a lot of podcasts.
Not that I don't get to, I just don't seem to want to.
There's a lot of good podcasts out there, but for every good podcast there's about 1,000 horrible podcasts. And when I say horrible, I mean the basis of the podcast. Like, they're difficult to find, to download. You have to convert them from, like, a WAV or a Windows Media File format to an MP3. You know, most times it's a horrible connection and you can't understand what anyone's saying. The audio only comes through one channel. It's very frustrating. And I know that we don't have that here. We've got our fancy microphones. We have a dedicated staff of one, which is Jim, who works very hard to make sure the show does not sound like garbage.
And who doesn't get enough credit, because we really make the show sound like garbage sometimes, and he fixes it.
Right, that's just the content, but at least it's very clear garbage that comes through in stereo sound.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was just kind of venting about that the other day on the Twitter machine. And
I saw you saying something about it, but I don't know which podcast you listen to, so.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. Right. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And then every once in a while, someone will be like, hey, check this one out, or hey, check this one out. And I'll say that of the horrible podcasts, 90% of them are wrestling-related, so you'll never listen to them in your entire life.
What? I think I'm starting to come around to wrestling again. I mean, I was just talking about The Undertaker retiring the other day with you on Twitter.
That's right. Mm. And Josh had to chime in and say, no, he was on the Raw 1000 3 weeks ago.
And he was, I guess.
That's right. He got his hood stuck on his head. He couldn't get it off. That's a way to be imposing.
That's pretty good.
Yes. So, how was your week?
Good. My FF came in, and I'm happy, man.
Yes, I saw the pictures. And I guess you had said that it was what it was graded at, you got it at quite the deal.
Yes, I'm trying to put it the right way. For the grade that it's at, I paid 3/4 of the price. Mm-hmm. So it was 1/4 cheaper than it should have been as far as, like, you know, the grade and what it's going for. And then when you tack on what they're gouging people for on eBay, it seems like I paid 1/4 less. If I on eBay, it's like 1/4 more for that grade, you know. So I was like, I'm totally happy with it. It's beat up. I mean, there's some damage on it. And, like, inside, when you open to the first page, there's a hole in the first page.
Oh,
because
really?
Somebody was eating candy or something, and the two pages stuck together. But I mean, outside, the book looks beautiful for the grade that it is, and I'm just happy. It's always one of those books that I always wanted to get, and, you know, to have it. It's sitting on my PlayStation 3 right now.
Burning up as you have it on, right?
Yeah, I have it blazing away. I was playing some Grand Theft before, but I don't even know what to do with it. I guess I'm going to put it with, like, the expensive books that I have, the other ones, the early Flash books, and, like, you know, keep them out of the sunlight and don't let people breathe on them.
Now, since it's, you know, the first appearance of Doom, have you thought about getting it, like, not slabbed or CGC graded or anything like that, but, like, maybe putting it in, like, a nice frame or something?
I have.
Like, for display purposes?
But I've seen very few things like that I like the way they work. Mm-hmm. Somebody gave me a frame for comics that this guy makes them. They're very nice. They're homemade wooden frames, and you could put, like, a comic in them, and you could fit, like, a Mylar or Mylite in there so that, you know, you can keep them protected. But they just – everything just doesn't, like – doesn't seem very protective to me. I don't know how to explain it. If I find the right thing, I would definitely do it.
Now, what I can tell you is you can go to one of your local craft shops, mm-hmm. and you know, you could have it professionally framed.
I've thought about that because I've had some artwork that I thought about doing that mm-hmm. with, but I just don't trust having the book out of my sight for 3 days or whatever it takes them to make it.
Gotcha, because I know my one lone comic page that I have, that Kang page, mm-hmm. I have framed, and it was professionally done in a Michaels, you know?
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I know because I have an Adam Hughes piece and that Kevin Maguire two-page Who's Who piece I thought about. And then I was like, I talked to them and they're like, yeah, we'll have it for a couple days. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Do you guys drink coffee in the back over your stuff when you're making things? And I don't know. It's just the more expensive it is, the less likely I am to let it go.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So on my front, this past week, all of my comics are finally put away.
All of them?
Yes. There is two comics, three comics that are sitting to my left. It's, two books that are going in my, Halloween pile, to give away to the kids for Halloween, and, one of the books that we're going to be talking about here today.
Hmm. I thought when you were talking about your Halloween pile, it was like my Christmas box.
No, like those, no,
these are two different things.
Right. I have the you know, the freebies and the various and sundry books that I can give away to children
right.
For Halloween instead of candy. I've been doing it for the last couple of years at my super secret scientist job, and we've moved the tradition to my folks' house where we go to for Halloween. They're kind of in a high trafficked area, so they get lots of kids.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids like the comic books.
And, I always said that's a great idea. I shut my lights off and leave mm-hmm. the house for a while. I'm no good at that stuff.
Well, being that I have a child of my own, you know, I have to start getting better at that sort of thing.
Yes, you do. But see, you have a softer heart than mine. Mine's like corroded and has like a block of wood around it and stuff.
Oh, goodness, Todd. If when the microphones are off, and I always say to people, you know, at the super secret science job, I go, talk to me at 4:31 if you want to know what's going on. once I'm off the clock, I'm a different person.
Yep, me too.
Yep. So let's get into comic book news. A lot has happened in the last 7 days since we recorded. And the funny thing is, as is wont to happen from time to time, a bunch of news... two or three things happened from the time that we recorded the show to the time that the show got posted.
Mm-hmm.
And being that we record these shows weeks and months in advance.
Yes. You know, we look into our crystal ball to get these stories, and sometimes we miss.
Yes. And it was just so funny because when we were at the shop that same day, I forget how it came up, but I made some sort of remark about Ben Affleck being horrible involved with comic book movies. And then the rumors came out about him with the Justice League movie, and then, of course, the long-awaited Gail Simone Kickstarter project. We have that to talk about. We have a passing of a true comic book legend to discuss as well. The schedule, and this is just for me, this is our digital news, the schedule for the next couple months of the weekly Legend of the Dark Knight Batman book every Thursday, and a topic that is near and dear to Todd's heart, possibly anytime he has one of those Google alerts. Now, the fact that I just said Todd has a Google alert, he's left the room.
I'm still here.
But he has a Google alert that's set up anytime that there's a news story about the Stephanie Brown Batgirl saga, so that he gets an immediate, like, telegram sent to him wherever he is.
Right on my phone, a picture of a waffle comes up.
That's right, that's right. So we're gonna talk about the latest in that. We're also going to talk about the books that we read last week. Some of the books that we read was the Sunset hardcover graphic novel from a couple weeks ago. We also have Incredible Hulk number 12 and Batman and Robin number 12. Now, the reason we're a little light right now on these books is, on Twitter last week, Todd had mentioned that one of the books that he had been reading for quite some time, he is dropping. And I had said, save it for the show. Let's yes. not spoil it, because I want to see if I can guess what it is. And if it is one of those two books that I mentioned, I don't think you can drop a book that's just a one-time graphic novel hardcover.
The secret's out. It was Sunset.
So we will discuss that book if it comes up, and if it doesn't, Todd will discuss at length, I'm sure, why he decided to drop this book. And stupid me, I accidentally emailed him in the pre-show notes of what book that I thought it was. But as I look at the list of the books that came out last week, I think I might have changed my mind. But I'm sticking with what my original thought was. We're also going to talk about the books that we're most looking forward to coming out this week. And, of course, our Twitter question from last week. And I also want to thank our listeners who follow us on Twitter for participating in our weekly question. You know, week after week, we have tons and tons of people contributing and answering and lots of really good discussion about the topic. And this week's was our favorite one-on-one slugfest in all of comics. And this was one of the more overwhelming choices. But we had a lot of surprises, but I think a lot of... You know, also, I don't want to say also rans, but a lot of expected ones. And I think the one that was the most nominated was the one that I was thinking of mm-hmm. when I thought of the topic, but it's not my favorite.
I'm the same way. I have three or four that were on the list that I always made it, but they weren't my favorite. And they're my favorite for reasons that I'll get into.
Yes, there's one that came, we'll get into it later, but there's one that came in at the 11th hour that was like, oh, if I'd thought of that, if I wasn't in a superhero mindset, that would have been the one that I chose.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into the news, and I do want to kind of start things off here with the, you know, the unfortunate and untimely passing of Joe Kubert, father of the Kubert brothers, and again, I'm going to kick myself, Andy and Adam Kubert,
yes,
who are some of the most prolific and well-known comic book artists of their day, but if it was not for their father, who trailblazed a path through the 60s and 70s with some of the most eye-catching and iconic art. You know, he ran the Kubert School, and it was that school that was opened in 1976 that produced a plethora of great artists that we know here today, from Rick Veitch, Amanda Connor, Tom Mandrake, Tim Truman, Bart Sears. Tons and tons of people came out of that school, and he will be missed.
Yes, he will. And with that school, like, there's probably a ton more that it's so, like, you know, ingrained now that people went there. They almost don't talk about it as much as they used to. But Joe Kubert, like, he's somebody who could have did anything. He did the war books. You know, he did superhero books. He did everything. And I'm one who loved his art, too. And he was working right up until right now. I don't know if you know this. Ralph brings in a friend of ours. Ralph, he works at Toby Hanna, the Army Depot, and mm-hmm. they give away pamphlets like with information about like how to keep up, you know, doing this, working on, I don't know, air conditioning units or your Humvee or whatever. And they're all drawn by Joe Kubert.
That's awesome.
Like, so he'll bring them into Dave, and he'll be like, here, like, they gave us some more, you know, like, not saying they're worth money, but it's just cool if you're a Joe Kubert fan to see that. And he was always telling me, they're like, there's new ones every month or every couple of months. I'm not sure exactly how often, but I was like, he was working, like, you know, at 85, and this isn't a swipe at Andy and Adam, but it seemed like he almost, like, did double the workload at the two of them. He was just a workhorse.
Well, I know it was about 2 years ago, maybe a little bit less than that, he did that full issue of Captain America, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. I'm not sure on the issue.
Yeah, it was definitely within the last 2 years, I would say. And I know that was like the last full story, like big profile thing that he did. And again, I'm not going to get into all the controversy over the press release and what everybody has been talking about it online. It's just sad to see someone so involved with comic books mm-hmm. pass, someone who's been so influential, and he will be missed by not only this podcast, but I'm sure by everyone in the comic industry.
Yes, I totally agree.
So just moving on in news from here, I would want to also mention the Ben Affleck rumors regarding the Justice League movie. Do you remember what we were talking about at the shop that Ben Affleck came up being horrible?
Was it his all-around acting, maybe?
I don't know. I think we were just talking about, like, that Daredevil movie, and, like, there's not a day...
I remember what we were talking about. We were talking about Kevin Smith movies. And
yes.
You were talking about how funny he is playing himself, like doing an over-the-top version of himself in Jay and Silent Bob, where he's like, I don't know, I don't like the sound of them apples, which I have to admit, he was funny as, you know, doing that whole parody of the movie. What's the movie?
Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting, which yes. was hysterical.
So the news had come out in between the recording of the last show and the posting of the last show that he was attached to possibly be directing the upcoming Justice League movie. It was in Variety and Deadline and all the big papers that report on news for movies and who's attached to what. But what had come out was that Affleck's people, almost as soon as the story came out, he had said, through his people, of course, that he had denied the offer, but he was still going to take a meeting with DC and Warner's to discuss it, but immediately he did already refuse it.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense to take a meeting about something you're not going to do.
Yes, exactly.
It's a big waste of time as far as I'm concerned.
So, Ben Affleck, his acting is hit or miss, mostly on the miss side.
Yes.
But he did direct The Town, and The Town was a very good movie, if you saw that.
He directed Gone Baby Gone, too, right?
He did direct Gone Baby Gone, and that was good. It wasn't great, but it was all right.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I won't take shots at him as a director. I mean, I joke around with you about as an actor, but I don't know. I've heard good things about those two movies, and I've never seen them, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the town is very good. I don't know if that's the tone that they want. Obviously, directors do make movies in different styles from time to time, but I don't know if Ben Affleck is the director. And again, his name has a bad stigma to a lot of people.
Yes. But wasn't he Superman in Hollywoodland?
He was George Reeves in the Hollywoodland movie. That's correct.
So maybe that's the connection that they're going for. I don't know. You never know.
The head honchos at Warner Brothers just did a Google image search of people dressed like Superman, and that was the first image that came up.
And they're like, "Hey, isn't that Ben Affleck?"
Yes, yeah. that was the criteria. Have you ever directed a movie? Have you ever dressed up publicly as a superhero? Then here's the biggest franchise we have. Have fun.
Yes, on both counts. Thank you.
Oh goodness. So just continuing with the news, I do just want to mention briefly the updated schedule for the Legends of the Dark Knight book that comes out every Thursday. I am a little bit behind on that because I've been more focused on getting caught up on my physical comics. And there are a bunch of one-shots, but there's also two three-part stories that are coming up. And again, they're usually a little bit longer than 10 to 12 pages each for 99 cents, and you get three of them, and then when it gets collected, I think it's a little bit more expensive. But the three-parter that is coming up in 2 weeks, my apologies, it starts this week, is written by Joshua Falkov, who's currently doing iVampire.
Yes, one of my favorite writers lately.
With art by Phil Hester. There's a one-shot coming up in about a month or so by Jeff Parker, who's more famously known for a lot of his Marvel stuff. And then Joe Harris, more famously of Slingers back in the late 90s, early 2000s, is doing a three-parter as well. Mike Oeming, who you might know from Powers, is writing and drawing an issue called Dungeons and Dragons involving Batman. I enjoy the weekly Batman stories, so I will definitely be picking these up, but I did just want to mention those creative teams to possibly entice Todd or one of the listeners from checking out these weekly books.
It entices me with Joshua. I would definitely try, whether it would be the digital or the later on down the line when they come out, but I'm probably going to read that one.
Yep. Well, it starts this Thursday, so get on the trolley, if you will.
I'm a trolley rider, sir.
So one of the other things that I did want to mention, of course, we do have a few more news items. One of them would be the Gail Simone, Jim Calafiore Kickstarter project that was announced Wednesday morning called Leaving Megapolis. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, whether or not I am or am not. The little pitch for it is when the caped heroes of the world's safest city inexplicably all turn into homicidal lunatics. No one is safe. The only rational thing is to get out of town, if only it were that easy. And it's just going to be an 80-page graphic novel, and they did meet their goal in 5 days.
Very fast.
Yes, there is still over a month to be able to pledge your support toward this. You can go as low as a dollar, and unfortunately you get nothing for a dollar, or you can pledge up to $500. And this would be, you get the book, of course. You would also get a full 11x7 penciled and ink commissioned by Jim Calafiore of any character in any setting that you want. And I know that's the one that Todd wants. The ones to get yourself in the book are sold out as a character in the background, and get the page that you appear in as well.
Yes. And for the dollar, you might not get anything, but you get a thank you in the book.
Yes.
So the book you don't own, you'll get a thank you at. But I think it's really cool, like the different levels they have. I don't know if you know this. You might have got it from the code I put out on Twitter last week. I donated to this project.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did.
Now,
even with the heat between me and Gail, I broke down and I donated.
This is to squash that heat?
Yes, I'm trying to build bridges between me and her.
Now, I did the $50 or more one to get the limited edition color print signed by Jim and the book. Which one did you do?
Iyer.
Oh, did you do the one to get the 9x12 commission?
Yes.
Oh, look at you.
Yes, might as well. I figure since I'm blowing money, I might as well just keep going for September. Yeah, I did the 150 for the pen and ink sketch one character.
Mm-hmm. Now, does it ask you who does it ask you to select your character now?
No, I got sent an email that said when the time comes, because they even said in the thing that they won't start even like the sending them out until November, maybe. They said that they will send you an email for information and the character you want.
Interesting. And like I said, there's almost a month still left to go on this. They already beat their goal by $2,000 as of the recording of this episode, and there is talk that they will be possibly upgrading it to a hardcover as opposed to a softcover graphic novel, and there's also talk of them possibly adding more things since they reached their goal so quickly. And me being a Kickstarter veteran, I've backed a couple other projects as well. The time that they get the most donations is usually like within the last day.
Really?
Yes. There's been a couple projects that I supported that I saw go from not hitting their goal to beating their goal by like a couple $100 within the last 24 hours.
Hmm. See, I'll take your word for it, because this is the first thing I've ever kickstarted, I believe is the phrase. I'm not quite sure, but to me it seems like it could be worth it.
Yes.
I was a slight fan of Gail on Secret Six, as you were, so I'm looking forward to obviously. I mean, I'm going to guess a 99% chance we're going to get this now, so that's really cool. And like you said, if they do a hardcover, add more pages, or do whatever they're doing, fine by me. It could only get better from here.
So if you are a fan of the Secret Six run, possibly the greatest run of comic books in the last 5 years.
I'm on board with that.
Okay. If you are a fan of that, definitely check this Kickstarter out. Read over everything. Don't just throw your money away like fools like Todd and I did. You can get you can go bare bones, and I think the lowest price to still get the graphic novel and nothing else, no other extras or anything else like that, is $14.
Right. That's what I think, too. I think it was $14 or $15.
And that's, that's the going price for most graphic novels if you're going to purchase something in the stores,
Mm-hmm. Deal at twice the price.
Yes, exactly. So the one last thing that I do want to talk about here in the news is the Stephanie Brown saga.
Ugh.
And other than just saying that, I'm going to let Todd run on that one for a while.
I'm just so tired of this. Stephanie Brown, yes, I know, we all loved her. That's why she was in that book for a little over a year and never was in any of the other. Like, her biggest claim to fame outside of comics is if you beat all the side missions in Lego Batman, you can build a Lego Batman spoiler character or something. I don't know. I just look at it as, like, we all lost somebody in Flashpoint. Just relax, okay? So I'm going to stop there because I'm going to work myself up.
All right. I don't want to get Todd all worked up, but I think a lot of people just kind of latched onto this character because she has been an integral part of the Bat universe for quite some time and a very well-liked part of the Bat universe for quite some time, you know, whether it be as Spoiler, whether it be as Robin, you know, whether it be as Batgirl. And I know you're saying that she was Batgirl for a year, but she was a little over 2 years, and the book was doing well. It was starting to build momentum. The back issues were very difficult to find, as were the trade paperbacks of the book. So it wasn't like it was a character that was not well-liked, and I think a lot of people were just kind of upset that she was replaced in the New 52 by Barbara, and then, you know, every time that it looked like this character was going to come back, whether it be in the Smallville book or whether it's part of Grant Morrison's Batman Inc. or whatever it was, every time that we saw some new information about her, people would get upset because it would get taken away. And I'm not one of these crazy people who are going to send waffles to Dan DiDio's house to convince him to bring the character back. When they bring Wally West back, you know, then, and then, or like start saying that they're going to bring him back and show us covers of him on the new Flash book and then pull it away and say, oh no, we made a mistake. You know, then I might not be sending waffles to Dan DiDio's house.
But the thing is, Leonard, they did that to us. You know what I mean? And
yes.
And when they were like, oh, Flash is getting Wally's getting a book. This was before the New 52. Well, Wally's
This was almost like 5-6 years ago. Yeah.
Right. Wally's not getting a book. He's going to be a backup, and it's going to be Jeff Johns, and it's not Scott Collins. I've been all through the thing that they're going through now with Stephanie Brown's with that character and other characters. I just find it, and it's not so much the fans, you know, like I understand I like characters too. I just feel that this is being blown out of proportion, like a slow news day. We're going to take the Stephanie Brown story and make it something. And like I said, I know, and I'm busting on a lot of this stuff, but like, yeah, she was an important part of the Batman universe, and the books are hard to find. They went up and the trades were hard to find, but that's because they didn't make that many because nobody was ordering them. If they were ordering them and people were buying them, there'd be a lot more than there were. And like, you know, and I know it's snowballed. Back issues go up. I could say the same thing with Secret Six, you know, it caught on, but it wasn't fully there. So it's gone. But that's just the way I look at it. I'm like, I think people are looking through this with rose colored glasses of just how important Stephanie Brown was in the world of comics. I don't know. That's my opinion. And I did get some heat, a little bit of heat on Twitter for it.
Well, the reason I bring it up now is because, of course, you know, people do torment poor Dan Dio about this on his Facebook page and, in, you know, at conventions and so forth. And somebody posted a joke about the whole thing on his Facebook page just a few days ago. And he responded in regards to whether or not Stephanie misses all of us or not. He responded, how can that be? She doesn't exist yet. Smiley face.
Yes.
So, people are up in arms over this. They're saying that how dare he say these things. He's now just tormenting us. DC is doing this to us on purpose. And this is the point where I say people are going out of their minds regarding this character. I'm DC, and I put a new book out starring Stephanie Brown as a character, whoever she is, and it does not sell more than the first issue of Justice League, I would go to those people's houses and take their waffles that they've been sending me and shove them right down their throats.
I'm exactly the same way. And here's the thing, you know, like, I do feel that, like, people are getting played because he's doing this. You know, he's tweaking them. And I had somebody say it to me on Twitter saying, oh, well, you know, maybe they shouldn't, you know, tease the fans and do this and that. I said, but every time you do it, you guys go out and you make a clamor and DC gets more free publicity. You're feeding the beast at this point. That's the only thing I can, you know, I can think of. I think he's just sitting there, you know, like going, hey, you know, keep going. And I find it funny, like, they talk about how, you know, the characters come and gone, and it's supposed to be in this book, and it's supposed to be in that book. DC just all around does that. Elemental Girl was supposed to be in the last issue of Justice League. She wasn't. On the cover of Justice League International, they pumped, you know, when one came out, they pumped that there was a brunette down in the left-hand corner. Then, like, when the book came out, there was no left brunette down in the left-hand corner. And, you know, they just seem, DC just seems to have ADD with what they're doing. Like, they don't know. These press releases come out, and they change things and everything. And Stephanie's just one of them. I think we can latch on to any other one and make, you know, make a huge explosion about it. I don't know.
Yeah. And again, I do have my theories as to why more people are up in arms over Stephanie, as I mentioned before, than, say, you know, Wally West. But again, that's for another day. I just find the whole thing at this point just to be silly.
I do too.
There's better ways to spend your time if you're a comic book fan. You know, go back and buy all those trades and buy all those collections of that Batgirl series and tell DC, this is the only thing I'm going to buy. Yeah. I'm only going to, you know, vote with your dollars, not with your waffles.
That is the greatest catchphrase ever.
There you go. Ugh. So I think that's all we got in news, and it was quite a bit of news, actually. Let's dive into the books that we read from last week. Now, I want to start off with Sunset.
Okay.
Only because I know that's the book that you did not drop that you've been reading for a long time.
Well, in all fairness, I probably won't pick up any more Sunset in the future.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, no, I just think the book's over. It's a one-shot and done.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm just joking around.
I wasn't sure if you had got tipped off to some information that there was a second one coming out, because there might be a second one coming out. You never know.
That is true. They could go further with this character.
Yes. So it is written by Christos Gage, art by Jorge Lucas, from Top Cow through one of their little imprints that they have. And, you know, there's the pitch online for it of what it is, but it's a very classic, in the sense, noir tale. And I was looking forward to this coming out just based on, you know, as we had mentioned before, Christos Gage's involvement in this. I'd never read anything that he has done outside of the superhero realm, and he's done quite a bit out of the superhero realm. I really liked this a lot. It wasn't great, but I really liked it a lot. I had, you know, my main problem was not the writing.
Mm, I think we're going to agree on a lot with this book. Go ahead.
Okay. No, go ahead, your thoughts on this.
Oh, I thought you meant I was going to let you go ahead. I didn't want to stop you. I'm the same way. I thought this was a good book, didn't think it was great. It was an interesting premise. I like the character because I kind of I believe we're almost the middle generation between his generation and the new one, so I kind of see a lot of this stuff the same way he does. He's that hard grizzled, you know, looking at the world with, like, you know, energy saving lights and you know, soccer games with no scores and everything, and I agree with a lot of what he's saying, but he's also a maniac at times, and I can't get into it. So the story I love, but the art, like I think you might agree, it's very, like, I don't know if he's lightboxing or just, you know, taking from, you know, magazines or whatever, but it throws me off, especially when I see, like, the main villain is Jack Palance. Just blows me away, especially since, little known fact, I'm related to Jack Palance, so that threw me off every time I see
really?
Uncle Jack.
Oh, really? I never
Jack
knew that.
No. Yeah, actually, my father's mother's maiden name, my grandmother, is Polanski, which was his name, which was Palance changed to... I mean, we're not close. It's like a distant cousin, but my family does know him, and he had a house not too far from here.
It was on the way to Berwick.
Yes. So,
like, I've driven by that house many a time.
Right, so I always found it funny, like you know, we'd talk about it, and my one cousin would be like, yeah, Uncle Jack Plant. And I don't even know if he's a fourth cousin once removed or an uncle, but we always just called him Uncle Jack. Just like that kind of stuff, it was like, it just seemed like when I was reading it, it was, here's the actors that I want to play in the movie if it was ever made. And I think, you know, like, you know, Jack's not going to be able to do it now, but like some of the other ones I can recognize here and there. And a couple of times it got muddied in certain, like, shootout scenes and stuff like that with the inks and the whites. It just didn't look right. I don't know.
Yeah, there were definite some parts where, as you had mentioned, the villain looked like Jack Palance. It looked just, like, straight up. There was no question who it was. And then, like, in the same page in a different panel, he would look completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that it was a black and white book that was so heavily inked in kind of like a smaller digesty size, it didn't lend to the art as good as it could. Did you ever read the Bendis Mark and Draco Torso book?
No, I always wanted to get into some of those early Bendis, like Goldfish, Torso, all that stuff, but I never got to.
The art style that Andraco does in that book is very similar to the art style that he does that is used in this book Sunset by Jorge Lucas, and I think it's done a little bit better in the Torso book, just because the page size is bigger. You know, like, even if you look at the preview pages that are available online of Sunset, you can see it looks a little bit clearer, but the actual printed page is much, much darker, which I think causes it to lose some of its effectiveness. And then as I'm looking into this, the week before the graphic novel came out, they did like a single issue in color of the first chapter of the book.
Mm-hmm. How did that look?
Yeah, and I didn't pick that up.
No, either did I. I was wondering if you saw any preview pages, if maybe color would help it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm going to go check at our local shop to see if they have one, just to thumb through it, just to see if the color would help the book. Mm-hmm. Now, it's still a really good book, and as Todd had mentioned before, I can relate very much to the lead character, Nick, and even though he is a veteran of, like, you know, the Vietnam War and everything else like that, a lot of the things that he says that Christos Gage puts in his mouth is stuff that I feel quite a bit.
Oh, I'm telling you, just there was that one scene where, you know, the son's talking back to him, and he's like, my mom took me to every soccer game my father watched. He's like, and he says, he's like, was that the soccer game where, you know, everybody got a trophy? And I was like, yep, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah. And I'm going to have to be living that in a couple years, you know, and I'm not sure how I'm not going to handle things the way that he did in this book.
Oh, I thought when he became a little wrestler, they didn't give belts to everybody. I thought that was still a thing, you know, that, you know, you could win or lose. But I guess it's not. It's becoming like Little League soccer.
Well, if you watch WWE, everybody has a belt these days, and none of them mean a lick of anything.
No, okay, I'll take your word for it.
So, what I also liked about this was, you know, and the I guess the pitch of this book is that he was a former mob enforcer, and he pulled a scam, and they don't really tell you what the scam is up front. And now they found out, and they're coming after him and his family.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's going to take the fight to them. And I will say this, the last two chapters of this really had me guessing the whole time. Like, I didn't know who was on whose side, and I don't want to get too much into it.
I'm with you.
Give it away.
Yeah, you don't want to spoil it, but I'm with you. There was, like, sometimes, like, you know, when things turned, I'm like, okay, is that real or is that
yes.
fake? And is, you know, is this person really, you know, going to do this to this person? I'm like, okay, this is really cool. And in the end, I was satisfied with the book. Like you said, I don't want to
yes.
make it into, like, you know, the greatest book of all time, but I feel I got my money's worth and more.
I agree. I recommend this book wholeheartedly. If your local retailer has it, check it out. I don't know if it's available digitally. But if it is, you know, maybe it might, you know, maybe the digital medium will help the art out on this a little bit more than, you know, the printed way, but it's still a very good book. Don't let that, deter you from checking it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, let me just see here.
Yeah. Cause I think it might,
actually it is available digitally and it's, you know, $5 cheaper than print. So if that's your bag, definitely check it out digitally.
Especially I think on a bigger screen, like an iPad or something like that,
mm-hmm.
it might, like, you know, look really good.
Yeah. And the little one shotty deal, the first chapter in color is available digitally as well for 99 cents. So, you know, even if you want to just stick your toe in the water that way, you have that option available to you as well if you are a digital comic reader. Again, as I mentioned, I highly recommend checking this book out. It was really good.
Yes, I totally agree.
So, now that we're going to get into books that actually came out, the monthlies that came out, when Todd had tweeted, and the exact tweet that he said was, "With remarkable quickness, I dropped the axe on a title I have loved for a long time." So, I wanted to figure out what this book was that Todd was talking about, so I looked at the books that came out from last week, and I was actually going to make a game of this. I was going to have the listeners guess along with us to see who would get it.
Mm-hmm.
But the prize that I was waiting on had not come in, and I actually got the prize in just today.
Oh.
And when I was telling some of my fellow compatriots at the wrestling this past weekend, and I told them what it was, they're like, don't give that away. That's too good of a prize. They're like, give it to me just because. And I'm like, no.
Maybe I'd like it.
You might like it. I don't want to spoil it because, okay. Like I said, it's definitely going to be a future prize in the show once I figure out what sort of contest we could have.
No problem.
But I was looking at the list of books, and the thing that was really tripping me up was you saying that you have loved for a long time. Now, I know, and again, don't say yet until we get into the books.
You're going to get dead silence from me.
Okay. Last week was a big Bat book, and I know Todd gets a bunch of the Bat books. I know he had dropped a Deathstroke some time ago. The thing with the DC books, though, was there were a lot of the books that are only a year old now, because, obviously, the New 52. But there were some books that were continuations, but maybe it's not a DC book. Maybe it's one of these other indie books that I just don't know, but I didn't go that route. I didn't think it was an IDW title. There wasn't a ton of Image stuff that came out last week, Dark Horse stuff that came out last week. And then I was thinking maybe it might be Captain America. I know Todd's been reading Captain America for a long time, and you can make the argument it's not as good as it used to be. I still think it's pretty good. I really like Scott Eaton's art on the book. I knew it wasn't Fantastic Four, even though I was asked 15 times at the shop if it was Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
If I read Fantastic Four, that's what it was. I thought it might be Incredible Hulk, because that's another book that, even though it just had a recent relaunch, it's been a book that's been going on for quite some time. So I was in between, like, Captain America, Incredible Hulk, maybe something else. And the book that I finally settled on, because of Todd's specific phrasing of a title he has loved for a long time, I guess that the book that he is dropping is Suicide Squad. A lot of people were down on this new Suicide Squad, and Todd himself had even hyped it up a bit on the Twitter machine. And I'm thinking maybe the worm had finally turned on this book, and Todd maybe realized that it may not be as good as everyone else says it is, or he's starting to see some of the faults in this book. But let's get into talking about the books that we read from last week with that out of the way. My choice is Suicide Squad. Let's see if I'm right.
And I'm going to let you pick the books as we go, so no one can say I'm leading this any certain way. So I'll let you go in whatever order you want.
Okay. So Batman and Robin number 12. I liked this book. I think the strength of this book is solely on Patrick Gleason's art. Not to say that Tomasi is a bad writer. Not to say that the resolution to the Battle of the Robins storyline and, like, the weird villains that are all former people that Batman has beaten that no one's ever heard of getting together. But this is possibly one of the best-looking books that features tons of ugly people in it that is currently being published. And I really love Patrick Gleason's art in this book.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree. Patrick Gleason makes this look fantastic. But what?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm with you. I really like this book. The only problem I kind of have with Batman and Robin this much is there was a couple things that Batman said that I thought were kind of clunky in the fight, you know, with the main villain. But my favorite part of this is Nightwing and Damian at the end. I thought was one of the coolest scenes in comics in a long time. And you could almost, like, you know, say that, like, you know, Nightwing's passing the baton to Damian.
Yeah, for a while we've talked about this book being more so of a Damian book to try to get people to like Damian, and also an Alfred book.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not show any more than with this issue, which is very heartening to see. And I really like that sort of stuff that they're doing to try to make Damian a little bit more likable of a character.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Batman and Robin number 12, still good, and still on Todd's pull list?
Still on Todd's pull list.
All right. The next book I want to talk about would be Incredible Hulk number 12, the continuing storyline by Jason Aaron, with the penultimate issue of the Stay Angry storyline, where As long as the Hulk remains angry, he can never relax, and therefore the crazed scientist who has been revealing this, who has been having the Hulk do this crazy scheme for him while the Hulk has been, like, subdued, and the Hulk is there to kind of clean up Banner's mess that he's been making, and it's been quite the mess. Not only do we get the resolution of what Banner's plan has been for the last several issues, but more so we get an awesome, awesome fight between the Hulk, Wolverine, and the Thing. And if this book had come out a while ago, this fight was so awesome, it could have been on my favorite Slugfest, but it was 2-on-1. It wasn't 1-on-1.
Right. I'm with you on that. I thought just the character, you know, interaction is fantastic. I'm always a sucker for, you know, Wolverine and Hulk, or Thing and Hulk. And I love, like, you know, early on in the book, they're like, you know, whatever's going on, we called the Avengers. You're the Avengers. Like, hey, if you get Thanos or Doctor Doom, you get Captain America. Hulk, you get us. And I'm like, I'm fine with that. And the things that go down just in the fight alone are you know, I think this might have been the most fun book I read this week, just for the slugfest. As, you know, we're joking, we have the Twitter question. Just every once in a while, like a good down-home, you know, just punch-a-thon. And this is what that was. And then on top of that, you get the ending of what's going on and what Banner's trying to do. And, you know, we're putting two and two together. And I'm like, this is really cool. And I thought the art's been a lot better than it has been in a long time, because this book just, you know, constantly rotating artists. And Pacheco, I think, just really did a fantastic job. And, you know, some cool things that he was doing here and there with the fight.
Yeah, and just a couple things I do also want to mention here as well. Jason Aaron, he was doing Wolverine for some time, and I really liked the way that he wrote Wolverine. And he did a couple issues of Wolverine, and then he did the Astonishing Spider-Man Wolverine crossover. But in a couple of those issues, and a couple of his issues on the Wolverine run, the Thing popped up, and he writes an awesome Thing. I really enjoyed the way that he wrote the interplay between Wolverine and the Thing in this book. Mm-hmm. And if he wasn't doing that Thor book come this November, I would love to see him on a Thing solo book.
I would even take him on an FF book. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, we've seen him write the Thing, and that's fantastic. He wrote Doom in this, and I had no problem with him doing Doom.
Yep.
Like I said, to me, the trickiest character in comics to write is Reed Richards, because you have to kind of walk that science line without being, like, you know, like a text manual and just boring the heck out of people.
Yes.
I think other than that, like, if he can handle that, then boom, he'd be perfect for an FF book.
So, Incredible Hulk, still on the list?
Yes, it's still on the list.
All right, so that is all that I had on my list of books to definitely talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So now to you, Todd. What other books from this past week would you like to talk about?
I would like to talk about Avengers Assemble.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying this book with the team that's pretty much the super team from the movie, and just they're fighting Thanos, which I'm a sucker for. I totally admit it. But I like the Guardians of the Galaxy are in this, and I've missed them for a while, and the Avengers teaming up. And I don't feel that this one has that has a lot what I don't like about the Bendis of books that he does. There's not a lot of sitting around and talking in this one. This is like, we're fighting Thanos, we're going into space, we're going after them, the Badoon are attacking. So there's not a lot of that. Maybe there's a little bit of, like, you know, maybe characters being a little bit of the same and quippy, but it's nowhere near as when I'm reading, like, his regular Avengers. So I really like it. I think he has most of the characters down, Rocket Raccoon, and he has Groot down amazingly well. He does Groot's dialogue perfectly. But no, like, and some of the swerves they throw in this, Iron Man's plan in this issue, I thought was absolutely awesome to fight the Badoon. And I just feel that this book is just first and foremost an action book. I think that's what Bendis is trying to do, is this is the flavor of the Avengers movie. And I think he's getting it, you know, down. Like, you can't bore the regular. Like, you're trying to bring in the masses on this book. And you can't just have, like, you know, Power Man and his wife sitting around talking about, oh, the baby's in danger, even though they're not in this book. But you kind of get what I'm saying. And I just loved it. It's been a blast The first couple, I think, were issues were clunkers due to the fact that they couldn't reveal Thanos was the villain in it until the movie came out, and then they right after that they came out, and it just seems that it's found its way.
So with that, I also want to mention that they just announced recently that it's not getting a new number one in November with the Marvel Now promotion, but Kelly Sue DeConnick, who is currently writing Captain Marvel, and artist Stefano Caselli, who recently was doing some amazing Spider-Man stuff, are taking the book over.
Mm-hmm.
The team is getting a little bit of a shake-up. You know, you got your Cap, you got your Iron Man, you got your Hulk, but they're putting Spider-Woman in the book, and they're also putting, you know, Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel in the book as well. And, yeah, so I'm probably going to pick it up when Kelly Sue starts writing it come this November, just to give it a try, because I really have been enjoying her Captain Marvel work, the early Captain Marvel work, and I really like Caselli's art on Amazing Spider-Man. So I'll be on Avengers Assemble at least for a look-see come this November.
And I'll at least give it a try once this team leaves. And I feel bad that I didn't mention Mark Bagley is drawing it. And I think this is the best work Mark Bagley's done in a while. Because he was doing that, like, that weekly book for DC a while back, the Trinity book, and I don't think he was doing his best work on that. But I look at this, and I mean, he has a whole month to do a book, and we've seen Mark Bagley almost do a weekly book on some things. Him, when he was doing Ultimate Spider-Man and Trinity and stuff like that, just the sheer amount of, like, work that he can do a month. But you give him time, and it looks pretty, pretty sweet. So I feel bad that I didn't say anything about Mark. Can't review a comic without talking about the art a little bit sometimes.
Of course. So what's the next book you'd like to talk about there, Todd?
I think the last book I'm going to talk about is the Fabled book. It is... Would you like to know what book I'm chopping from my pull list there, Leonard?
Let's see if I'm right. Go ahead.
It is Captain America.
Oh, I was so... I was between the two books.
You were.
Oh.
Let me say something about Suicide Squad before I get to Captain America. I really enjoyed this Suicide Squad issue. They brought back a character that I was looking forward to them bringing in a while ago, and they just made him disappear, and then he shows up in this issue, and I'm like, okay, that's really cool what you did with him. He's back. I'm happy. The fill-in artist was gone from last month, so it's the regular artist. I have the book here. I can't think of his name right off the top of my head. Blah, blah, blah. Fernando Dagnino. And I really like his stuff. So he's back on the book. I do admit the last issue was a clunker and I didn't like it, but this one all sails, you know, forward. But Captain America.
Oh, heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking. Though I don't know how long I'll be dropping it, because I'll probably be trying it when the new Marvel, you know, Now starts. But,
right, with Remender and Romita Jr. on the book, right?
Right. I have to at least give them a try. You know, I'm not a big Romita Jr. fan, so we'll see. But the thing that I had a problem with this, and I knew you weren't going to get it. I was actually shocked that you were that close with the Marvel book, because I thought you would think like you and not think like me, because I there was no way you could say, like, in your mind that somebody would drop a Brubaker Cullen Bunn book.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I feel Brubaker isn't writing this anymore, and it's more Cullen Bunn. And I feel the flavor of the book has changed. Right out of the gate, you know, like, I've been reading Cap, and, you know, it's been more espionage and down-to-earth stuff. And now we have people who are just showing up, and they can create missiles, and I don't know. It's just too fantastic. But the part that got me was right at the end. What sealed it is when Cap gets taken down by the mind-controlled people who are watching the equivalent of Rush Limbaugh. That's the only thing I can think of is that guy. It's the exact ending that happened to Falcon during the Mad Bomb storyline. He gets overwhelmed and taken down by a group of mind control. I'm like, this is the exact same storyline as the Mad Bomb. My mistake. And I'm like, I don't want to read that again. We're done.
Aw, that breaks my heart. Well, you know... like I said, it's definitely been on some shaky ground, and I think from some of the interviews with Brubaker that he's had over the last couple months, and I really do like Cullen Bunn's writing, whether it be on the Venom book or Sixth Gun or the Captain America team-up book. Are you still reading the Captain America team-up book, or are you not even checking that?
I did not get the Captain America team-up book when it flipped over to... It was Cap and Bucky first, right?
Right.
And then, okay, I'm just making sure, because I didn't know if there was a Cap and Bucky book for a little while, and then a Captain America team-up book, but I didn't get the... I was reading, because Captain America came out at the same time as Captain America and Bucky, the McNiven one.
Yeah.
Which is this one.
Yes.
So I had Winter Soldier, I think, and Captain America. I was like, that's too many Captain-related books.
Well, I'm on it until the end, you know, just so we can get the end of this storyline, of course. And I'm not sure how I feel about Remender. Remender's one of those guys like Fraction, where Fraction did sell me with the Hawkeye book after trying everything else that he's written. Whereas Remender, I've tried a bunch of his stuff, and it's been really hit or miss with me. Like, it's either, like, super highs or super lows. Like, I loved his... Age of Apocalypse thing that he did in Uncanny X-Force, mm-hmm. but then the follow-up storyline with, like, Captain Britain and all that jazz, it just stunk out loud.
See, I can't ever remember buying something by Remender that I liked. But here's the thing, to not take away from him either, is I can't remember anything that Rick Remender wrote.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't remember, like, because I would never go out and just go, I'm going to buy a book because Rick Remender's on it. I may have read something and went like, okay, this was all right, or this was good, and just not remember that he was the one who wrote it.
Frankencastle?
I passed on that. I think I was trade waiting on that. Did that come out in trade? Because I'll pick it up maybe.
You know, you could just go to, well, I was going to say, you could just get DJ's copy. I'm sure he had it in triplicate.
Probably. No, I never read Frankencastle. My loss, I guess.
Your loss indeed. Your loss indeed. So Captain America is the book. I was so close. I was thinking, like I said, that it was going to be Suicide Squad. Oh, maybe next time. Maybe next time.
You want me to quit Suicide Squad. That's
what No, you know, I just figured maybe, like, you know, the story got, like, bad enough that you wouldn't be comparing it to the Holy Grail of the last 5 years of comic books and Secret Six.
Oh, let's not go down this road again. You guys, never mind. Nope, done.
All right. So, Todd, I'm going to let you start it off here. What is the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week?
I'm looking forward to the Rorschach book. I've seen preview art by Lee Berhamo, and I'm like an absolute sucker for Lee Berhamo art. I've loved, you know, like he did that Lex Luthor series. He did a Batman Christmas hardcover. He's done a couple. He did the Joker hardcover that was like the movie version almost. And I mean, Rorschach is just a great character. To see what they do with it is going to be fun, I think. And I've been enjoying the before Watchmen. I think some are better than others. I think some are really good. I just think that this is probably the most popular character, so that it's going to be the one that's most looked at. So see how it flies.
I really like the cover of this book, and I've been trying to avoid, you know, like any of the preview pages beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
On stuff, just because I don't want anything like tipped off dialogue wise. I just read the Ozymandias one,
mm-hmm.
And I really like Jay Lee's art in it. His art is colored brightly for the first time I think in its entire life,
mm-hmm.
and I think that really lends to the book. But I'm not 100% sure. I think I'm going to give it one more issue, only because this issue felt a little padded.
This one did. The first issue I loved. Of Ozymandias. Second issue, I think, like you said, was a little too much. I liked the fight scene at the end. I thought that was really cool. But I could see where you could go that it was a little... I thought it was a little heavy in the writing.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like they kind of like... They told a story that could have been told in like 14 pages and 22 pages. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. But I'm with you on the Jay Lee art. I think up until I saw some preview art for the Rorschach, that he's the best one on all mm-hmm. these books so far. We haven't seen Adam Hughes yet, so I don't know.
Right, and which one's he doing? Is he doing he's doing the Dr. Manhattan one, right?
Yes, he's doing Dr. Manhattan.
Okay. So we'll definitely see how those go when they come out, and we will be looking forward to those. The book I am most looking forward to picking up this week would be a book that seems like it's fallen a little bit off the schedule, not too much off the schedule. Maybe it's just a book that I've been so anticipating, I just wanted it to come out now and not wait for it, and that would be Saga Number 6.
That's another choice that would have been mine.
Yes. There's a big Image week. Walking Dead 101 comes out. So does Revival number 2. A ton of other stuff comes out this week. But in a sea of awesome comics, the one that I really want to read the most, the one that's going right to the top, like what I look at, you know, I look at my list and what it comes down to is what book is being read first. And on a week like this, it's normally Walking Dead. But I'm reading Saga first.
Like I said, I love Saga. I think right now Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples have the best first pages in comics. Every issue. Yeah. It just seems like it's like, you know what? And I think it's a brilliant strategy when you pick up a comic, you know, somebody who's going to try it, what's the first thing they do? Flip it open. And, you know, a lot of times these first pages, these are grabbers. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So that's what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. We do have our Twitter question, but before we get into the Twitter questions, I do also want to mention to be sure to leave us a review on iTunes if you're getting the show that way. And I'm a bit hypocritical in this way because I am not an iTunes getter because I don't trust iTunes. The only person I trust to download my podcast is me. I don't trust the evil Apple Empire, if you will. But if you are getting your podcast, specifically our podcast this way, you know, be sure to give us a rating of 5 stars or more. It just takes a simple click. If you want to write us a review, I would not be adverse to that. Neither would Todd.
Nope.
One of our listeners a couple of weeks ago, Jesus Ramos, gave us a nice 5-star review saying he's listened to other comic book podcasts in the past, but for the most part, those podcasts either spend most of their time talking about everything but comics, or spend a good chunk of their time discussing the entire output, or dissing the entire output of entire companies. Okay, okay, you like Marvel, so every time you mention DC, it's about books you don't like and read anyway to talk crap about them? ? And there's a lot of podcasts that seems to be what they are up to. So it was refreshing to hear a show where two guys who clearly love comic books above all else and talk about comics they read each week, both Marvel, DC, Image, and other indie books, as well as discuss the latest comic news, including and include their listeners via weekly Twitter questions. Give the show a try. You won't be disappointed. Thank you, Jesus, for leaving us that good review. I also want to mention there was a listener who tweeted me recently who said he has yet another person who has picked up our show and is listening it to from episode 1 all the way up to now.
Oh, they're going to see the progression of our talents.
Yes, they certainly will. And of course, you can interact with Todd and I through the Twitter account. The show Twitter account is Weekly Longbox. Todd's Twitter is Roker the Joker. That's Rowker. I am LF Chikarison. And, you know, I try to keep the wrestling talk to a minimum, but every now and then I do post cryptic things about things that I'm not happy about, but I do try to keep things as positive as possible, and I do try to be as interactive as possible when the listeners do tweet with me, and I did remember to make sure that the main Twitter account did tweet to our followers, or those following that account, to follow us individually, so hopefully you picked up a few extra followers over the weekend there, sir.
I got a few, and I don't even think they were spam bots.
Yes. If I didn't delete the spam bots, I'd be in the 1 million followers category.
I kind of like having them because I need them. It makes me look important, and you know how much I like to look important.
Yes, indeed. So our question last week was your favorite one-on-one slugfest in all of comics. Now, my mind was thinking superhero slugfests, of course, and so was most of our listeners. Some of them did go off the beaten path, some stuff that I never would have thought of. CM Towns, that is his Twitter handle as well, mentioned Goku versus Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z. John Effin Siler, longtime listener, mentioned Scott Pilgrim versus Gideon Graves in Volume 6 of the Scott Pilgrim versus the World book. A lot of Thor represented on the list. You know, we got the annual Thor Hercules fight that we get every now and then. Jim Meeker, Control Alt Deliver on the Twitter, mentioned that one. I like that Twitter handle.
I do too.
Stiff Peg Pete, another great Twitter handle, mentioned specifically from Thor 351, a great Thor versus Hulk battle where they just destroyed a town. A couple other ones with Superman 75, and that was another one, the big ending to the Doomsday fight that Superman had. That was another one that popped right into my mind when I thought of this topic, from longtime listener Mike Schaefer. One that's right up your alley would be from Hobby Hottie on Twitter, who mentioned from Superman 463, the Flash vs. Superman race. Wasn't so much as a slugfest, but that's an inspired choice if there ever is one.
That's one character versus another.
Yes, definitely. Kevin Hellions, Team Hellions on the Twitter machine, mentioned the Spider-Man vs. Juggernaut battle from around the 230s of Spider-Man, which is a great, great story. Just not even just a great fight, but a great story altogether. Official ATD mentioned one that broke my heart, and that was Daredevil vs. Echo from the Kevin Smith, David Mack run on Daredevil. And it's not that it's not a good story, but it was that fight in that book that inspired that horrible wirework scene in the Daredevil movie that destroys my life every time I think about it.
That great, great Daredevil. That's the thing that got me to read the Mark Waid comics, that Daredevil
movie. That wire work. Oh, I'm leaving now.
I have to handle the rest of the show by myself.
Yes, yes, you do.
Okay.
No. So the overall winner amongst our listeners, whether it be longtime listeners, MC Hanscar, HH2 News, Dan Peck, Noel Margate, Vegas Margate on Twitter, Shoeless Patch, or Jason Kirk, all longtime listeners, all of them chose the epic Batman vs. Superman fight from Frank Miller's fabled Dark Knight Returns. And that is the first one that I thought of when I thought of this topic, but I did not go with that one. But that was the winner. That was the one that the most people chose.
Mm-hmm. That was on my list too, but not one I chose.
Yes, I went with a Dark Horse candidate, and it's not from a Dark Horse book. I'm going to go first on this one, if that's okay.
That's fine with me.
Because it's a Daredevil one, and it's one that I've mentioned on the show before, probably. I do try to mix it up and not talk about stuff that I've mentioned on the show before, but this was one that I thought of. It's issue 360 of Daredevil. It is during the Heroes Reborn series, where all of your big heroes are gone from the Marvel Universe, and pretty much all we had left were like Spider-Man, Black Widow, Daredevil. This was written by Carl Kessel with art by Kerry Nord, and it's Daredevil versus the Absorbing Man.
Ooh, that's an interesting choice.
And the only thing I can tell you about this is that not only does Daredevil win, he wins handily.
Hmm.
And it's a very interesting story. And it's one of those things that shows how smart of a character Daredevil is and can be in the hands of a correct writer. And Absorbing Man is a guy who's taken down the Hulk. He's taken down Thor. He's done all this sort of stuff against the huge bruisers of the Marvel Universe. But Daredevil beat him. And I love that fight.
Hmm. It's a very interesting choice. I never would have thought about Daredevil fighting the Absorbing Man.
Yes. So what is your choice?
My choice, I had to break it down to a classic Hulk versus Thing fight.
Yes.
But it's not one that you would like naturally think of. It was very special to me. It started in FF 320 and finished, I believe, in Hulk 350. And it was at the time when the Hulk was gray and weaker. And it was when Thing was mutated and he was the pineapple thing.
Oh, yeah.
Looked like the so he was stronger. And at this time, they thought Hulk was dead, so nobody knew he was alive. You know, the Mr. Fix-It was you know, doing what he was doing, and nobody knew who he was. And he ends up, through a series of events, fighting the Thing, and you're like, there's no way. Finally, in the history of the Hulk versus Thing, Thing has never beat the Hulk. And you're like, this is the time he's going to do it. And the Gray Hulk is just so, like, you know, like devious and does a whole bunch of different things. And he ends up beating the Thing through a series of events, just brilliant moves. And at the end, he's like, things like that voice. He's like, yep. He's like, you never could beat me, Grimm. And he just destroys him. And I was like, this is awesome. And it just shocked the heck out of me. And it's just one of those books that I had so much fun that that always stuck with me as one of my favorite little fights.
Now, the one that I do want to mention, which is an honorable mention for me, it came in, as I mentioned earlier, in the 11th hour, and we are going to be wrapping things up here, folks. Not that I have an eye on the time. I don't want this to be a three-hour podcast. And that would be from professional wrestler Icarus from Chikara, the promotion that I work for. He's on the Twitter machine at Icarus, WRW. And he simply said, Jesse versus Cassidy. And if I wasn't in a superhero-thinking mood, that would have been the fight I would have picked. That is such an awesome choice for a fight, because that is one heck of a fight.
That was a throwdown.
Yes, it was. And it's just like, and it's the whole, even if you just read it, like if you just read that one issue and just saw that fight, I think it's strong enough that it holds up. But if you read the entire run of Preacher up to that point, man, oh man, the weight of that fight. Like, you have to, like, sit, like, you have to, like, take a break from comics after you read it because it's just so heavy.
You're not reading superhero comics right after that.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. So, again, I do thank you for everyone on Twitter who did, who listens, who is a loyal listener and follows along on Twitter and gets involved with our fun little questions that we have every week. Next week's question is one that was inspired to me by an email I got from someone at my super secret science job, and she will never hear this podcast, but I did let her know today that she did inspire this question, and that would be, in all of comicdom, who has the best facial hair?
That's an interesting question.
Whether we're talking about a full beard, whether we're talking about a mustache, whether we're talking about just a goatee, whether we're talking about mutton chop Jack sideburns, who's got the best facial hair in all of comics?
Wow.
And let us know on the Twitter machine, of course. Throw that hashtag GrizzWLQ on there so I can find them a little bit easier. Even if you don't throw it in there, I'm sure I'll track them down. And this is going to be a tough one for me, but it was just one of those ones that I was inspired by, and I'm like, I don't care if I can't think of anything for it. I got to go with it.
I'm speechless. I never actually thought when I was a, you know, when I would get all growed up, when I was bouncing on my mama's knee, that I'd have a podcast talking about what character has the best facial hair. I never thought it would happen, but it's awesome.
It is here.
So.
So that is all for this week. I do thank you for all hanging in there with us and listening. Be sure to tell your friends, follow us on Twitter, iTunes review, any way that you can let us know and let your friends know. I may even, take email questions. You know what? If you have email questions for us, if you have comments that you would like to make to us that are longer than the 140 characters allotted by the Twitter machine, you can email me at lfchikarison, just like my Twitter handle, at ymail.com, and I'll be sure to share those emails with Todd. And, if we get some interesting emails, some interesting comments from some folks, we'll definitely read them and talk about them on the air. Who knows? Maybe you might even inspire a future topic on the show.
Yes. Give it a go. You can't do worse than us.
You can do as good or slightly better.
Right.
Not worse than us, though.
No.
We're pretty bad. So for Todd, this is Leonard. I do thank you all for listening to episode 39 of the Weekly Long Box, and we will catch you all here next week.